Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. My guest today is Michael McNichol, the director of Clatsop County Public Health. The department provides a diverse range of services for the county's 37,000-plus residents, from family planning to immunizations, restaurant inspections to disaster preparedness. The most recently added service is a grant-funded syringe exchange program launched last month to help stem the spread of bloodborne disease among intravenous drug users. Mike will talk about how the program is going after an initially slow start, as well as discuss other public health challenges facing the North Coast. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The syringe exchange program was begun in early October. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Tell me a bit about how it's going so far.
Sure. The first couple of attempts that we had selected a space behind Safeway, and then another space in the Napa area where the fire department is. It took a couple of weeks for folks to actually show up. I think we had to build. We were in the trust building phase, but after about the third week, we had a lot of folks show up, and we had about 3,000 needles given to us in exchange in one day, which was pretty amazing, actually, to see that number. And since then, we've continued to meet or have our event right behind Safeway. Just last week, we collected another 1,000 needles, and we're going to move. Our next event is going to be in the morning in Seaside, in the afternoon at Astoria, see if we can generate some interest in the Seaside area.
Where is the Seaside location?
It's near the little park near the river, and I don't know if it has a name.
But, okay.
That's the space where we did a survey early on in the process, and in the jail of folks who were arrested for drug use. And they said that was one of the places where that kind of activity has gone on before. So we thought we would try to head that off and see if we can get some of those needles out of the park as well as out of circulation.
3,000 needles the third week in Astoria sounds like a lot. Were you expecting that many?
No, actually, we weren't. We had several people bring in just 5-gallon buckets of these things. And we actually didn't have enough needles on hand to exchange the one for one. So we learned from there that we need to have a lot more on hand. So we've made adjustments as we go through the process. This is brand new on the North Coast and the first time in Clatsop County. So, it's a learning process for us, too. But now we bring enough that we could probably double that if we had to.
Do you have any sense of how many people are generating those 3,000 needles?
That's another difficult thing, is that what we found is that the actual individual users aren't the ones exchanging the needles. They have what they call messengers who bring the needles for them in bigger containers, and then the messengers are kind of being a little cagey about who they're representing, which is fine, as long as we're exchanging the needles. They up to 4 or 5 people per messenger. So there's probably at least 20 to 30 folks that we've got so far in Astoria.
So you're giving them 3,000 needles, and in turn they're distributing them to their friends or associates.
That's the idea, yeah.
Okay. Have you heard from any users about what they think of the program?
We've heard from the messengers themselves, who are reporting from the users that they really appreciate the program. And they really didn't have anywhere to go other than Multnomah County was the closest one to actually do a needle exchange. Most of them realized the hazards of sharing dirty needles. So I think that in combination with the messengers sort of sending the messages too is important. But another thing we've added since then, we are partnering with Jordan's Hope for Recovery, and we actually are offering naloxone training for those people who wish to have it.
Oh, what kind of program?
So naloxone training is the drug that you can do intravenously that will save a life if someone's having an opioid overdose.
Right.
So this will actually save a person's life. So we actually have about 8 people from that community who have now been trained in knowing how to save somebody's life.
Wow. And I'm not familiar with Jordan's Hope.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
So Jordan's Hope for Recovery is run by Carrie Strickland. She has a website if you'd like to check it out, Jordan's Hope for Recovery. And she's very passionate about the program. She lost a son to the opioid addiction. And so from that tragedy, she built up a nonprofit organization dedicated to help some of these folks get out of addiction if they can. And she's been a real strong partner and a great She's a great individual, and she brings along the so we basically how it happens is every Thursday we bring our van, she brings her van, park next to each other. We do the needle exchange, and she provides naloxone training as well as, you know, a comforting person to help them. And if someone is actually seeking to get detox help or seeking addiction treatment, she can help them with those resources. So she's been a fabulous partner.
Now, are you providing any sort of referrals, information on that as you're distributing the needles?
So again, that goes back to the trust issue. So our understanding of how this works in the community, you have to build quite a bit of trust to even bring that issue up. We want them to bring it up to us. So
okay.
At some point, you know, we'll probably have someone who says, you know, I'm tired of this life and I want to get some treatment. What we're trying to do is figure out where we could take them, one, and then where they could get some addiction therapy. Because right now, they're sort of limited in this county about where some can go get detox help as well as addiction therapy. So, so we're working on those as well.
Is there a place where they can get detox help or addiction therapy?
There is. There's Pathways in Columbia County. We have a couple of private outfits that can do that work too. But what we're trying to find is a place that can have a community bed, if you will, where someone needs to detox on heroin or meth in a non-medical situation can get that detox therapy, even if they don't have insurance. That's been always the hang-up, is not having the insurance, because it's pretty expensive to do detox.
And so it's not something Medicaid would pay for?
Well, they would, OHP, if we get them signed up. So it's
okay.
A cart before the horse kind of a thing. So if someone is homeless and doesn't have insurance but wants to have detox, then we would have to kind of make sure all that stuff happens at once. So that's sort of where the we're trying to work through that process so we could make sure that we have those steps in place. So if someone does finally say, you know, I really want to get help, that we can actually get them where they need to go, get the stuff started, and make sure they start seeing treatment and detox.
Are these IV users pretty much using heroin?
The ones we see, probably, yeah. We do have some folks who are, you know, using both meth and heroin. We have noticed that in that community there is a hierarchy, if you will. You have the folks who use marijuana and alcohol, and they don't mix with the folks who use intravenous drugs and meth. So we're really particularly trying to find those folks. We seem to be seeing a lot of the opioid issues with injection drugs. So I think that's who we're mostly getting these from.
The opioid addiction is such a big problem nationally. Does Clatsop County have as big of a problem with that as the other parts of the nation?
I would say it's no different than any other parts of the nation. I've read some work by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who did some analysis, a meta-analysis of trying to decide, you know, trying to figure out how many people might be intravenous drug users, because that's really not something most people admit to. So trying to figure that number out. And they came up with a range that seems to be fairly consistent. And if we use that and extrapolate to Clatsop County, we have between 600 and 900 IV drug users in this county.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to comprehend.
Yeah. So and if folks are using, you know, between 10 to 20 a day of syringes, which is not uncommon, we've seen it during our surveys that people use up to 30, you could just see the volume. If you multiply those numbers out, you could see there's a pretty serious problem.
Okay, yeah. For somebody who's not aware, explain why it's really important to use clean needles.
Sure. So primarily it's because sharing dirty needles, you can contract communicable diseases such as hepatitis C, HIV, syphilis. And beyond those communicable diseases, we also see folks who get, because they have abscesses on their arms from using dirty needles, from bacterial infections. We also see endocarditis, which has been increasing in the hospitals, which is inflammation of the heart. That's a pretty serious condition. And, you know, those are the kind of things that in the next 6 months, we're hoping that we get some data to show that we've made some improvements in those particular areas, especially in the reduction of HIV, hepatitis C, syphilis, and maybe some of the emergency department rates for those kind of issues that they see for overdose and death, since we are providing naloxone training.
Critics of such programs say that they condone illegal drug use. In fact, Sheriff Tom Bergen was quoted in the Daily Historian recently as calling this a ludicrous feel-good program. How do you respond to criticism such as that?
Sure. Sheriff Berg and I have had a conversation about that. He feels strongly one direction and I feel strongly another. But, you know, I don't argue that, public health doesn't endorse or condone drug use. What my job is, and public health's job, is to reduce the burden of communicable disease in a community. So we see it as this has been a evidence-based, science-based effective means for reducing communicable disease burden in that population. It also reduces it for the general public, because if you have that population who are not using their needles in a hygienic way or disposing them properly, they end up in the ground or on the ground near playgrounds or public areas and dugouts and all over the place, and you can have accidental needle sticks, and now we have a bigger problem. You know, it's right now to treat hepatitis C, for example, there is a cure for hepatitis C, but it's $100,000. So how many times do we want to have to pay this? There's a societal cost when it comes to IV drug users beyond just the drugs themselves. There's a huge cost to help treat these folks. So if we can prevent some of the ancillary problems other than the addiction, then that's a bonus.
Absolutely. Are there places where the public have reported IV drug users or needles on the ground?
It's not been very specific. It's more anecdotal. We hear the quote, "I see them everywhere." Well, that's not very helpful. But, you know, I think around the Riverwalk has been one area, some of the playgrounds, some around up in the areas like elementary schools and other schools. Now, I don't know the number or where, but we do hear that anecdotally. So what we've been doing also, beyond just doing needles exchanges for the folks who are actually IV drug users, is if anybody's interested, we actually can hand out a proper sharps disposal container. And if they do see them and if they handle them properly, we'll go ahead and dispose those needles. If they find them and dispose them in the containers, we'll take them and get them out of the environment.
Well, that's great. So somebody could come to the department if they wanted to help with that.
And actually, we've seen a couple of folks down at the Safeway area who are walk that frequently and say they've seen them, and we handed them a sharps container. They happily took it, and they've been collecting them ever since.
The fact that you're at the 32nd Street location on the Riverwalk or off the Riverwalk behind Safeway, is that a common area where IV drug users are congregating?
Not necessarily. I think it's because it's easily accessible. For the homeless population, we're also IV drug users because it's not too far a walk from any direction. I don't know where the actual drug paraphernalia and or exchanges of it, the drug itself, are occurring. I have no idea. But this seems to be a place where people can walk to fairly easily from where they're being their homeless camps and exchange needles with us. So I think that's why that place works so well.
If you're just joining me, you're listening to a pre-recorded interview with Clatsop County Public Health Director Mike McNichol. He's discussing the department's recently launched syringe exchange program to prevent the spread of bloodborne disease among intravenous drug users. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. Have you heard from members of the public any criticism about the program since you began it?
Actually, it's been the complete opposite. I'd like to tell your listening public a little bit of story. So 2 weeks ago, we were behind Safeway, and this elderly woman comes out of Safeway and holding her bags of groceries. And she stops by and talks to us and says, you know, what are you guys doing? Because the sign says harm reduction is sort of a, you know, not very descriptive sign. And we explained to her this is a syringe exchange. And she said, wow, that's great, because, you know, I lost a son to this problem years ago. And then she toddled off down the Riverwalk. But then about 10 minutes later, she came back, set her groceries down, opened up her wallet and says, I don't have much money, but I want to donate to this cause because it's so important.
Wow.
And it was one of those moments where we realized that, this really does mean something to somebody and how important it is. And somebody recognizes the work we're doing. So, you know, that really, you know, sparked us to move even further and really released any doubt about what most of the public, the silent majority, are thinking about it.
You are operating on a $50,000 grant for the program, a 6-month grant. Do you plan to continue the program after the grant expires?
Yeah, so we're hoping to drag that out for at least 2 years. We're going to see if we can make it last longer. And actually, it was a donation by the Coastal Family Board.
Okay.
And so that donation was unrestricted funds for this program. So we're going to try to make sure that we can do this program for at least 2 years. And then after that, we'll seek other sources. Because by then, if it's really as established as it is then, stopping something that's actually working and solving some of our other issues with communicable disease and reduced numbers of emergency department visits, it'd be awfully hard to say that that's not been effective if we can prove it. So the 6-month deadline for me was as a pilot. So I wanted to bring it back to the Board of County Commissioners, say that over the 6 months, this is what we did, this is what we found, and these are the results, and then see if and make some correct course adjustments if we need to.
Is somebody in the throes of an addiction concerned about contracting other diseases?
I don't know about that. That's a tough question. I haven't asked that question particularly. There is awareness that that does happen. We've had some stories that say that even the dealers now are handing out fresh needles. So I think there is an awareness that the sharing of the dirty needles is, you know, a cause for disease. So that's my best anecdotal answer for that.
Okay. I know you have fairly strict rules about the site when the needles are turned in, that no sign of drug use at the site can occur. In other words, users are not supposed to be using when they're getting the needles. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct, yes. So every week we set out the ground rules. So every week we put on a Facebook post that says where we're going to be at what time. And as part of that, we post our rules every week about there's no paraphernalia or any drug exchanges that shall occur. They need to self-govern. And if we do see it, we're going to close up the shop and go away.
Okay.
So we make it very clear, and we haven't seen that. And another sharing exchange of programs like in Multnomah County and elsewhere, they also have similar rules. And that population, because it's such a needed service, they self-govern pretty well. They don't do that kind of thing.
And you've had that same experience here?
So far, yeah.
Okay. When I spoke with you in June, the county was in the middle of a syphilis outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going?
Well, actually, since then, we did receive additional state funding to do a lot of testing and treatment. We spent some time in the county jail and tracking down partners of these folks who were found to have syphilis. And as of a couple months ago, we've had no new cases. So either we did such a great job that it's gone or something's changed, but we'll take the credit and say that we did it.
All right. And you were doing some education outreach.
Absolutely.
I understand.
Yeah. So we spent a lot of time on that topic because it's a, we had cases. We had one case in particular where we had, a pregnant woman who had syphilis, and that you can have that can be passed on to the baby and with some pretty severe consequences. So, we did see some successes in this, that we did get the right people treated and tested and treated and made sure that that didn't happen.
Do you have any idea if the child was born with syphilis?
Oh, it was not, because we found her and got her treated and baby turned out okay.
That's great.
Yeah.
We're moving into flu season, so mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you've heard anything from the Centers for Disease Control about projections for the flu season this coming winter.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about the severity that we could expect, but the flu vaccine is here and available. The public health departments across the country recommend that everybody should get a flu shot. But in particular, folks who are immune compromised, the elderly and the very young, should probably get their flu shot, because being sick, especially with the flu, can be very dangerous, especially if you're in one of those high-risk categories. So we really suggest you get that. And you don't have to come to the public health department, although we have the vaccine. You can go to your local pharmacy, your primary care provider. Those folks also have the vaccine at relatively inexpensive prices.
And how long is the vaccine effective for?
It's for a season.
For 6 months?
Yeah, it depends. They give it a year, so that's why everyone does it yearly.
And it takes a couple weeks to take effect, doesn't it?
Correct, yeah. So that's why, for example, I got the flu shot back in August, because I wanted to be prepared so that when September, October rolled around, I was ready to go. So,
do you get another one early next year then?
I will, yes.
Okay. All right. There's a lot of controversy about the flu shot, as I'm sure you're aware. Why is it that many people say, one, they get sick when they get the vaccine, or two, it's just big pharma trying to get money from all of us
Sure.
consumers?
Right. So you know, this anti-vaccine thing started a few years ago with a unfortunate article in The Lancet, which is the English version of the Journal of American Medical Association, which has been proven to be completely false, of course. But, you know, that sort of stirred the whole conversation about the need for young people to get, especially kids, to get vaccines. But we've seen, you know, what I would say is that if you look in places like in Africa right now, we have a polio outbreak in some parts of Africa still, and they are desperate to get the polio vaccine. So there's a recognition there that that's the only way you can stop these communicable diseases there. Here, we're arguing whether or not someone should get the polio vaccine. Now, if that ever were to break free from Africa and come here, all those who didn't receive the vaccine could be seen for some pretty serious trouble. So, you know, the herd immunity does work. The more people in that herd are immune, the less likely those who are not are going to get sick. So I think that everyone should do their own research, of course, but be careful what you read on the internet. So there's been plenty of evidence to show the vaccines work, especially in preventing some of the things like pertussis or mumps or those, mm-hmm. Those things that can really hurt a kid. So
regarding the flu vaccine, is it possible to get the flu from the vaccine?
I've never seen that. I mean, you can have a mild reaction to it, some flu-like symptoms, but no one actually gets full-blown ill because you're using the flu vaccine. The material itself is dead; it's been deactivated virus. So you can't have a dead virus create the flu. You can have your body just responding to it, and it might overcompensate and cause some flu-like symptoms. But you can't get active flu from a vaccine shot.
How many people die from the flu in the United States each year?
I don't want to be misquoted, but it's in the thousands.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a gentle illness for everyone.
No, especially the elderly. We see, that's our population. We see the most delicate in this is the elderly and the immune compromised. It can be life threatening with the flu. If you remember the swine flu that came through about 10 years ago now, we had quite a few deaths with that, even locally. And they were immune compromised and had other illnesses, and they had their bodies weren't ready for the response. So it's pretty important to make sure that you do what you need to make sure you can have an adequate immune response.
Okay. What other health issues are you facing in the county that you want to tackle?
Let's see. So right now we're really trying to focus on working with our fellow counties in Tillamook and Columbia on how we're going to deal with the gonorrhea and chlamydia problems. Now, gonorrhea and chlamydia are sexually transmitted infections, and we're seeing gonorrhea rates and chlamydia rates that are just out of control. Where our nurses are spending an amazing amount of time trying to track down folks to get tested and treatment. We're trying to figure out how to make a regional approach to this, because at this point, even with chlamydia, if someone has a positive chlamydia test, we just don't have the staff to follow up on the pure number of folks who might have it. So we highly recommend that people get tested for that with their primary care provider, because it can lead to pretty serious problems for women down the road. Same thing with gonorrhea. And gonorrhea is important now because we are seeing some cases in Hawaii and elsewhere where gonorrhea is becoming resistant to the antibiotics that we have for it. So, we really need to figure out a way to start getting on top of this, because Oregon, like the rest of the country, is the percentages, the incidence rates are really alarming. So, the best thing to do is have safe sex. But in those cases where you don't, you should definitely get tested and treated.
Why do you think the outbreak is going on now?
That's a good question. I think that we have a population that isn't being as careful as they could. When HIV was a deadly disease, and now it's not, it's a chronic disease, that, once you have diseases that were seen as deadly move into a different category, the fear factor goes down. So kind of like syphilis, everyone thought, oh, syphilis is gone. Well, it's not gone. It's just, it's not as prevalent as it used to be. But, with gonorrhea, because no one's practicing safe sex in the public, apparently, that, we're having more and more incidents of gonorrhea and chlamydia. And I think that's part of it, is that the fear factor has gone down about all these deadly cases, so not as many people are practicing safe sex techniques.
I would think you'd see the rates of HIV going up as well then.
We probably will if this continues. There's been a spike in particular populations, especially with African-American women and Latinas. Those particular populations have been seeing spikes in their numbers, and so of HIV. And so it's an interesting issue about, you know, how that's happening. So we are seeing HIV rates go up in certain populations.
Is there any connection with the opioid epidemic, do you think?
That would be a stretch because of the ages and the numbers of folks we're seeing with HIV. There might be, but I don't think that's not the real issue. So
okay, I was thinking of the gonorrhea and syphilis outbreak too.
Yeah, gonorrhea we haven't seen that, but syphilis can be transmitted through needles exchange or through dirty needles.
Okay.
So if we do this needle exchange properly, we should see syphilis rates continue to decrease.
Okay.
So that's one of the bonus.
All right. Parts. And I was also thinking if somebody is in the throes of an addiction, they may not care about whether they have safe sex.
That's true. Usually, though, with heroin, it's not a drug that makes you, you know, feel very frisky, if you will.
Okay.
So it's the methamphetamine side that does seem to have that. So, I mean, we do need to make sure the folks who are taking illicit drugs are also practicing safe sex, because we don't want them to get any more gonorrhea, syphilis, HIV, hepatitis C, hepatitis B, the whole list of the gamut of diseases that are possible.
So how do you help stem syphilis and, or not syphilis, but gonorrhea and chlamydia in the midst of an outbreak?
Yeah. So what we really like to do is have the ability to have enough staff to do what we would call point of dispersion. So we would have clinics, not just in our clinic, but throughout the county and throughout the tri-county area, where if you found out you had chlamydia or gonorrhea and you gave us a list of the partners, we'd have enough staff to follow up with every single one of them and have them come in and get tested and treated. That's what we really like to do. We just do not have enough staff to do that. So our goal is to figure out a way regionally where we can do that. Because we do have a lot of movement between the counties here, from Washington County to us, to Tillamook, to St. Helens. You know, we have to figure out a way to try to get some regional approach to this, so we can actually get the start, you know, grappling with this issue, because it's not an easy one. Because the testing and treatment is the only way we're going to stop it.
What are the symptoms of both the diseases?
Well, gonorrhea is, you'll have painful discharge during urination and other things. And chlamydia can actually be hidden. So, like, if a woman has chlamydia, you may not even know it for years. But you do still, they could have discharge and other things. But the trouble with chlamydia in the long run is you can become sterile. It can make women sterile. So that's why it's really important to have you treated if you suspect it at all.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to end on that note. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
Okay.
I want to thank my guest, Mike McNichol, the director of Clatsop County's Public Health Department, for coming into the studio and discussing not only recent outbreaks of sexually transmitted diseases, but also the department's new syringe exchange program for IV drug users. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
The department provides a diverse range of services to the county's 37,000-plus residents, from family planning to immunizations to the most recently added service, the grant-funded syringe exchange program launched last month to help stem the spread of blood-borne diseases among IV drug users. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives was engineered today by Graham Nystrom. The show can be heard every other Friday on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.